This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Tough night on the hardwood, on the men's side, really on the women's side too.
Both sides, yeah.
A couple games last night of note on the men's card. Virginia went over to Harrisonburg to help James Madison kind of open their arena, a building that was ready last year, but because of the pandemic, they couldn't really have any crowds at all. And held the Cavaliers, had 14 points in the first half, fewest in any half under Tony Bennett. Didn't shoot it well at all.
Obviously.
And at the end of the night, Madison hit two tough shots in the final minute to win 52-49 last night in Harrisonburg. So the Cavaliers fall. James Madison, by the way, Mark Byington, terrific coach, 8-2 in their farewell season in the Colonial. But tough night for the Cavaliers. Kihei Clark missed a three. Virginia missed 21 threes last night in James Madison's first ever win against Cavaliers.
Well, again, the Hoos are 6-4, including a win against Pittsburgh, which was by the gods, the basketball gods. They could easily be sitting there at 500. But when you can't score, Wes, that is a problem.
Yeah, it is.
Now, we are used to watching Virginia playing tough, physical defense, low-scoring games. But, man, getting the ball in the basket has been an issue. And when you only put a 14 spot up in the first half, that just goes to show you how difficult it's been. And so there's a ton of work for Tony Bennett and company to do here. And you take a look at their roster. Again, everybody keep telling you in basketball this year, what does your roster look like?
Right.
I mean, there's all this movement left and right. Do you have the right combination? Is it the right chemistry? Is it? Did you whiff on the transfer portal? I mean, there's going to be a thousand questions for everybody this year. But I would say that the early returns on Virginia basketball looks like this could really be a struggle the rest of the year. I just haven't seen enough yet where you go, well, just again, I know Tremaine called earlier and said we're going to be fine. Hey, Tony Bennett's a brilliant coach, and he's got a great program. But this particular year looks like it could be a tough, rocky road because they just simply can't score.
Yeah. No, and I think that Virginia's going to be in a fight for the year, and I'm not so sure that Syracuse might not join them because the last night the Orange didn't shoot it well. Buddy Boeheim had a tough night.
3 of 15 for Buddy Boeheim.
And Villanova won. They pulled away in the second half to win 67-53. Villanova's 26% from three-point range, but they also had 27 offensive rebounds. Most they've had 19 years in a game. I like the old school nod on jerseys for both the Wildcats and the Orange last night, but good heavens.
Neither team shot the ball well. In fact, I mentioned that this was game two.
Right.
Game one was Texas Tech and Tennessee, which was an atrocious offensive basketball game. The numbers were scary. Both those teams combined to miss 54 threes in the first game. And then you got the Syracuse-Villanova game. I told you Villanova missed 37 threes in that game. Buddy Boeheim goes 3 of 15. He's shooting 26% from beyond the arc. You know he's a better shooter than that. And Syracuse has to find their stroke. I mean, they've had some crazy games in which we've seen them give up 100 in a loss to Colgate. But when, you know, you're only scoring 50-some-odd points, this is a team that we expected to be offensively kind of fun to watch.
Yeah,
bunch of shooters on the team, bunch of scores. Wasn't the case last night. They got outscored 41-24 in the second half of the game. It was still a tight game about 6 minutes ago. Could have gone either way, but did not shoot the ball well. And as you pointed out, got out-rebounded by 21, which is a problem as well.
Yeah. So, tough night for the ACC on the men's side. Pittsburgh on the women's side did beat Coppin State. But elsewise, Virginia lost 69-56 to American. They're now 3-7 on the year. Liberty beat Virginia Tech in Lynchburg 59-40. Kenny Brooks' team trailed by 9 after the first quarter and shot 28%. Now, some of this coming off the exams, you never know what you're going to get sometimes, but or going into exams, you never know what you're going to get. This time of year, you can throw a weird one out there. Let's hope that's the case in the case of Virginia and Virginia Tech for sure.
Well, for Virginia Tech on the women's side, I mean, huge expectations. Top 25 kind of team, all that stuff, and it's still early in the mix. But they're a better team than what they showed last night.
Yeah, no doubt. So therein lies the night in basketball. Football news for you. No word at all on head coaching vacancies at either Duke or or Virginia. Some notes, though, from the league. Mark Whipple has resigned as the offensive coordinator at Pittsburgh. A mutual parting of the ways, it sounds like. There is speculation that he will be headed somewhere else. And Mario Cristobal is named as the head coach at Miami. That's the latest kind of in a nutshell for you.
Well, the rumor is that Whipple could be going to Nebraska.
Right.
I had a couple folks call yesterday about that as well. Whipple will not
right.
be coaching in the bowl game as Pitt gets ready for Michigan State down at the Peach Bowl in Atlanta. But as you pointed out, Kenny Pickett could probably just go ahead and make the calls anyhow. And I said earlier, given Michigan State's horrific secondary, I think Kenny, if he was calling plays, he'd probably have that thing in the air
right.
90% of the time anyhow.
That's it. All right, back to the time machine before Coach Krikorian gets here. Virginia Tech is next. And Christopher Parker actually hit the number here. He says on a tweet, inaugural year, ACC year, 2004 for Hokie Sports. That's the year they won the football championship. That's how you make an entrance into a league.
It's part of it. And, you know, there was a time for an extended period of time in that decade that Virginia Tech really carried the banner for the entire league.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Florida State was going through a kind of a weird end of the Bobby Bowden era.
Right.
Clemson was kind of all over the place. Tommy Bowden taking over. But, man, Virginia Tech was the go-to team in this league for a long, long time in the early part of the century.
Wake Forest.
Told you. It's all about Billy Packer.
60s. We'll go early 60s with Billy.
Billy Chappell, Billy Packer, you know, Bones McKinney.
Football?
It didn't matter. It's basketball school.
Tim Duncan era?
And they were pretty good, too.
All right. What about Chris Paul, Riley Skinner being kind of locked up in
the
same
era? Pretty good, too. But, I mean, there's no Billy Packer era.
There is a tweet we got. I'd like to watch the 95 ACC tournament.
Randolph.
Then make sure Randolph Childress gets his flu shot after the game.
Boy, he was so good. Was that a run?
Yeah, it was.
Was that a run?
Set the tournament scoring record.
Spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that Wake Forest North Carolina game in Greensboro was one of the all-timers.
Okay.
All-timers.
Three left. Notre Dame. Take football out of the equation.
Why not? They were conference member last year. Got beat by 100 championship game.
I'm still going to go with Mike Bray winning the ACC. 2015, they won the ACC. The women's team made the Final Four. So did men's lacrosse.
That's a pretty good run.
Best in the ACC for them,
yeah,
for sure.
That's a pretty good run.
Now, you might be able to go back to the 70s, and I don't think in 78 when Digger took the Irish to the Checkerdome in St. Louis for the Final Four, to lose to Duke in the semifinals, losing to the G-Man and Spanarkle and Kenny Dinard and Gene Banks, I don't think that one
number. For Notre Dame, I'm just going to keep them in the ACC era. I'm not even going to go back to yesteryear. But I think your call with Bray and the boys, that was a good one.
Yeah, Steve Vastori out of the corner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Louisville. We told you 2012-13. Won a combined 23-3 in football, back-to-back Final Fours, won the 13 national championship. Now, you could go back into the, you know, 86 maybe with Purvis Ellison, 80 with Darryl Griffith. I don't know the rest of, you know, what's going on from a football perspective. I don't recall Louisville being a factor much there.
Well, you know, you had Howard Schnellenberger was there in town.
Yeah. All right, Mario Cristobal named the coach yesterday. What about Miami? 80s? Come on.
It has to be.
Right?
I mean, I think it is. Now, again, only true fans of the school are going to have a better feel for it. But, I mean, it's got to be the 80s. I mean, it hasn't been – I'm going to be honest with you. Since they've been in the conference.
Larinaga won a championship in Atlanta.
I get that.
Shane Larkin.
And the football
team. Kenny Kaji.
The football team under Mark Richt made one appearance in the conference championship game. That's it. I mean, gun. There's really been very few and far between from a football perspective.
2001, they won football and the College World Series in baseball with Jim Morris.
That's pretty good, too.
Mm-hmm.
Great era for football. Of course, they've always had a great era for football, it seems like. I don't know. That's why you throw it out there for the fans. 844-SAY-ACCN.
Speaking of, Lloyd in North Carolina with Packer and Durham. Lloyd, good morning.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
We're well. Thanks, sir.
I just wanted to go back a little bit further than you guys have been going back with the University of North Carolina. their golden years, 1947 to 1950, starting with Charlie Choo Choo Justice and Art Weiner, three straight major bowls, and a tremendous football team. Only 20,000 seats at Keenan Stadium at the time. But the tennis team had six players that all became tennis professionals, including Don Skakel, who became the coach at Carolina, and Dick Sashus, who became Wimbledon champion and U.S. Open champion, and definitely the best amateur golfer that ever went to Carolina. Harvey Ward won the NCAA Golf Championship. Then in 54 and 55, won the U.S. Amateur back-to-back. Several other sports were really great, but I just didn't want to take more of your time. It's just a great period of time.
That's what that's all about right there. That's also when Hook Dillon, that was right after the Hook Dillon era, old Winston-Salem guy, right, for UPAC.
That's a good call.
Yeah, that's a really good call. And that's kind of where you got to, if you're going to combine sports here, you really got to dig into this. And there are not many windows where comprehensively you have that kind of success.
You got to really know your team. This question is not for bandwagon fans. Because it comes across that way.
Yeah.
You have to answer it right.
Yeah, and you could throw, you know, you could throw two or three schools out there, a singular year and singular sports that might be majestic to them. But if you want to take an athletic department, you got to do some digging. Now, there is this Learfield Cup that comes out, as you know, every year that recognizes overall accomplishment in athletics. Now, the more sports a school has, the more apt they are to be higher up in the Learfield Cup. Number of sports certainly counts. You get points for success, things like that. And that's where you get Texas and Stanford and things like that. The trick here is, if you have under 20 sports, not many do in the ACC, I think only a couple schools, you have really under 20 sports, you got to work at finding the year that most of your sports had successful seasons. And that's a tougher item to come across, I think, people.
That's why, you know, just speaking from a personal standpoint, when it's at Clemson, I mean, you got to go 81 because
Bill Wilhelm's operating baseball.
You're missing everything. I mean, you haven't hit it yet. ACC Golf Championship.
Yeah, Golf Championship.
Let's get that right.
Yeah.
Larry
Penley.
The first. Bobby Robinson, Larry Penley.
Packer.
I threw the party. I had nothing to do with the win.
The picture in this conglomerate of renovation you do all the time.
It's in storage. I got a ton of stuff in storage.
Let me bring that back.
Yeah, well, I'm just telling you.
So the khaki 81. Slacks in the flow for nothing
That's
else.
Right. If I could have got us to confetti's, we would have been in business.
Dude.
If I could have got the Clemson golf team to the limelight in the early 80s. Tell you what.
See, that's down the street now, isn't
it? Could have been the end of the Clemson golf program.
Could have been the end of the Clemson golf program.
Larry Penley's Hall of Fame career could have been done just like that.
How many people do you think are driving by our show in one form or another this morning and hear us mention confetti's and limelight in Atlanta? And if they're sitting there with coffee and they're talking to their wife and all of a sudden just spit coffee out across the breakfast table and the wife or husband looked at the wife, vice versa, and said,
"What's going on?
What's the problem there?"
You don't need to know. Some truth in that.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Off to Tallahassee. We only talk to champs on here, right?
National champs.
National champs. Mark Kerkorian in Florida State, winners again the other night in Santa Clara. And on PKs, Coach, the irony of the way it happened the other night, I mean, were you just sitting there thinking, holy cow, here we go again for the big ring, we got to do this again?
Yeah, you know, you really hope that you can score the goal during the regular game or even in the extra time, but that wasn't meant to be the other day. I thought that BYU played us very, very well. It was a really good championship game with two highly competitive teams battling it out, and, you know, as you know, that's the way the game is solved. At the end of the day, if over the 90 minutes and the overtime periods, we can't solve it ourselves, then we need to do it through penalties, and I thought our kids stood strong and performed when they needed to.
Coach, first of all, congratulations. I know it's your third, but, man, winning one's always great. It never gets old. I understand that. But how much did this team get driven by what happened last year, being so close? And, you know, we just got you see these stories all the time where folks go, hey, you know what? Unfinished business. We're coming back for more. Kind of seemed like that kind of propelled your team all season long.
Yeah, you know, we didn't really speak about that a whole lot. You know, every year and every season is different. The players come and go, and all of us remember what happened in the last national championship. And we thought that that we had a good team. We thought that we had the right team to win the championship a year ago, and we didn't get it done. So I think for myself and the rest of the staff and all the players and everyone associated with the program, we knew that. There was unfinished business, as you say, and that we needed to go out and give our best effort.
Mark, this is the third since 2014, and as Pac said, I know they're all different, but what made this one in particular special to you?
I think we're going to look back at this one and look at it in a much different way, and it's probably because of the whole year, the world, the COVID situation, and you know, then when you take that and you apply it to the athletic world, you know, we started in July a year ago. We played the fall season. Then we came back in January. We trained and we played through May, which is an extraordinarily long season, even for the basketball teams. They usually play. Of course, they play two semesters, and it's a long season for them, but. I don't think that their season starts in August, and for us it ended in November and then started again in January and ended in May. I think for all of us coaches and everyone associated with the world of soccer, trying to figure out and manage the team through that and then turning around and coming back again in August for a preseason and making sure that we're not putting our kids at risk of injury and that we are peaking at the right time, not having anything to rely upon for information because it's never been done before. And I think our strength and conditioning staff, I think our medical team all got it right. Technical staff did a good job with all of the different elements. So I think we'll probably remember this as being challenging in so many different ways, but it's still the COVID effect.
Coach, at the end of each month, Wes and I do a thing on the show called Notepad. And we look back at the month that was, and we give the best offensive player, defensive player, surprise, all that kind of stuff. My selection for the month of November for the best defensive player was this lady by the name of Roque. And Wes was looking at me like, on packet, when we were in football season. I said, let me tell you now, she is stopping everything. Goalkeeper for Florida State. And, you know, I go back to that 1-0 win against Virginia. And the Hoos had a great team. It was an ACC showdown. 1-2 nationally for an ACC title. And, man, not only was she great and your team great, but didn't you get that hot goalkeeper through a championship run like this? How about her performance? I know it's a team game, but, man, when the goalie's great, man, you got a chance.
Yeah, I think you have it spot on. You know, it at the end of the day in a lot of sport, it depends on how well you can defend. And Christina Roque stood strong. She was there when we needed her. At the end of the semifinal game against Rutgers, she made a couple of just fantastic saves and played brave and with a great deal of courage and steady as can be. And I think that's a wise choice on your part, not knowing all the football players in the conference. You know, I think our guys here, we had a few pretty good guys on the football side too in their defending, but Roque is a great choice.
All right, I want to go back to her for this standpoint alone. And I know, you know, last year was last year and this year is this year. But since last year was later than it normally was in terms of the calendar, right, it's fresher in the memory. I just remember her face at the end of last year. I just remember in the disappointment of her, and then it comes back to her this year. Now, Julie Zhao and the game winner is one thing. But Christina in particular, Coach, that's something for a sophomore in college to be on that stage twice in 2 years is remarkable.
It's remarkable. And, you know, last year we had, you know, three penalty kick shootouts in a row, right? Mm-hmm. To beat Duke and then to beat Virginia and then have Santa Clara knock us off in the final. A lot of pressure, a lot of big moments, and a lot of disappointment for all of us in not securing the victory in the final game last year. But I think Christina is a really level-headed kid, and Our goalkeeper coach, Mike Bristol, he does a great job preparing these kids both physically and mentally to be ready for that moment. And I think Christina was ready.
Coach, watching the match, the championship match the other night, you were fired up, man. I was kind of interested to watch. You've been in so many of these, right? I mean, it's a pressure situation. Everybody wants to go. What was the message to the team late when you were like, hey, we've been there, done that? Was it a reminder, the time just to be cool, or was there a moment to say, hey, all right, let's go? I mean, you tell me, you're the coach. What was that like? Because, I mean, you were pretty adamant. You were outspoken. You were, like, fired up and letting them rip.
Yeah, you know, it was a great crowd. It was really a big crowd, and it was a loud crowd. So, you know, trying to get the message to different players at different times was really challenging because it was such a great environment for the kids to play. But for me, it's never too much about getting too high or too low in the emotion. It's about recognizing it's a 90-minute game, or in this case, the extra 20 minutes of overtime. But you know, if we can be level-headed through the course of that, I think our likelihood to find a result is there. Probably what you were seeing was more about trying to give them messages rather than firing them up. But it certainly could have come across that way because it was loud, and trying to get that word to them was a little challenging.
All right, I know this has all happened in the span of about 7 or 8 years, but I want to put some perspective to it. You've now tied Bob Braman for the most national championships at Florida State. He has 3 with track and field. You have 3 with women's soccer. Does that mean anything to you? I mean, do you at some point pause here in the next couple of weeks and go, okay, we've done pretty well here?
Well, I think that we certainly take great pride in the successes that we've had, and that Coach Braman, of course, the most legendary of all here at Florida State, Bobby Bowden, and Lonnie Alameda winning her a national championship. But for me, it's much bigger than that. When I look at the legendary coaches, you know, Mike Martin, and all of the success that he had for so consistent for so many years, and, you know, a lot of people will only define success by national championships. I don't look at it that way at all. I think that we're surrounded here at Florida State by great folks and great coaches. And, you know, maybe when I retire and walk away, we'll be able to take that time to look back and appreciate the wins and losses and championships and so on. But we're in the moment right now, and we're enjoying it, and know that we have fantastic student athletes. They're great in the classroom, they're great in the community, and they're great on the field. So for me, I think that just pleased to be able to work with these kids and the folks around here every day.
Hey, Coach, you know what 3 means, don't you? It means it's time to go win number 4. That's what it means.
So what you guys probably don't know is we had the good fortune back in the early days of winning 2 when I was at Franklin Pierce, and those still matter to me also.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, 3 is nice here, but for me, I look back at those moments. Those prepared me and us for these moments.
You know what that means then? It means it's time to go win one for the other hand for you is what it means.
Hey, Mark, okay. Just in passing here, when coaches have success, they typically also have relationships or friendships with other coaches. I'm curious, just from a standpoint of growing as a coach and developing as a successful coach, who do you talk to? Who do you lean on? Who do you share ideas with in success? And where do you get some from?
Well, you guys probably would have no way of knowing this, but almost every Tuesday, I spend out at our football practices and going out and watching Coach Norvell and his assistants teaching and training and trying to learn from them and the way that they're doing it. And I'm a big fan of Mike Norvell. I think that he's going to get it right here at Florida State, and that the program is going to be back to the top where Coach Bowden and Jimbo had it. You know, here in-house, I think that, you know, I try and get out and I try to look and learn, and, you know, Sue Samurai as well. And there are many of the coaches here. But in the world of soccer, there are a few old-timers like me that that I do speak with quite regularly, and try and pick their brain and run things by them and share different ideas with. And I think all of us need to have people like that to rely upon to give us different insights.
Well, Coach, you have built a great program. Not good, great program. And, you know, when you win 3 in 8 years, as often as you've been in the College Cup, in that national championship game, I know that you got more coming your way. And I know you're going to deflect that and say it's all about the players and the staff and the support group, which is all tied into it. But, you know, it all starts with a vision at the very top. And I say it all the time, you know, if you got great leadership, you can do amazing things. And you have done that at Florida State.
Well, I sure appreciate it. It's very kind of you. And, you know, when Dave Hart brought me here a long time ago, he taught comprehensive excellence. He wanted to be great at everything. And what I told him at that time is there may be a lot of people out there that will outsmart us, but nobody's going to outwork us. And that's continued to be the way that we approach things. And we're going to make sure we do our homework and do our research and bring in the kids that can best help us win.
Hey, Coach. Real quick before you go, we got into this a couple days ago, almost by happenstance, with Brent Pry, the new football coach at Virginia Tech. And Packer asked him a question, and we kind of picked up on it with a couple of other coaches. So here it is. When you're riding along in a car or when you're at home and you turn on music you want to hear, who are you listening to?
Oh, boy. My daughter is the biggest Queen fan that you could possibly imagine. So I think when I'm in a car with her, I don't have any choice on what it is that I'm listening to. We're going to be listening to Freddie Mercury and in Queen, but that would be the answer, I think.
Well, you know, we kidded around with Brent Pry. I said, listen, next time you come on the show, do you have some walk-in music? And he said, man, I'm an Allman Brothers guy. So, you know, We Are the Champions seems pretty fitting
there you go.
Right now.
You've
for
done
Florida
well.
State. Seems that way to me.
Yeah. Yeah, I think last night when the band played that for us, it was a familiar sound with my daughter always playing it as well.
There you go.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks, Coach. Appreciate the
time. Thank you, guys.
You bet.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
You bet. Mark Krikorian, the head women's soccer coach at Florida State, third time since 2011. They have won the national championship.
That is becoming our go-to with the coaches. You know, we've always had the question for our student athletes about what's the hardest class.
Right.
And the answers have been fantastic over the years. But the walk-in music for the coaches, this is now going to be, I think, our new bread and butter. Queen. So far, you know, and when Mike Young went with the little Pearl Jam Corduroy
yesterday,
I loved that. I didn't expect that at all.
No, and that's why I think you're – again, here we are.
Yeah, and when Pry went with Allman Brothers, I mean, I'm watching again. I don't know Brent until he came on the show.
Yeah,
but when he went Allman Brothers, I'm like, I could see Coach Lil Allman Brothers getting cranked up there. It's gonna be our new go-to, I think.
Yeah,
see, it's coming.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
All right, fourth place, the best catch of the regular season. Ready?
Yeah.
Fourth place, 7.2 percentile of the vote. Emeka Emezi? Really?
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Really?
That doesn't surprise me.
Roddy Jones came clean, by the way, with Jonas Pope of the News and Observer in an article that's in Pages today. About the last 2 minutes and 12 seconds of this game, Roddy said, I will go down in history forever being the guy who said run the ball.
That's all right. He'll get over it.
17%. Third place, Josh Downs. Again, Clint Gwaltney's touchdown calling the end zone my favorite part of this whole thing. There we go.
Still thought he was out of bounds, but that's okay. Still a great
You want
catch.
To go under review just to make sure again?
You know, I've watched it, I bet you, 20 times. And I think he lands out of bounds, but that's okay. It counts on the scoreboard.
Yeah.
And it was a wide receiver U winner. And
that's
he's
a touchdown.
Been on the show. He was great. And that was some kind of catch.
Dontavian Wicks at 25%.
Oh, you got to be
kidding. I'm just telling you, the people have spoken.
Come on.
I'm telling you, the people. Pack, you're a man of the people. The vote is for the people, and the people have put Dontavian Wicks second.
And people make mistakes.
50.6%, and the winner, Trey Turner's one-hand catch at Miami.
He has a great catch. One's good as Wicks, but
50.6?
Hokie Nation getting out the vote.
Hokie Nation was getting out the vote. Look at that.
Cavalier fans are upset. Hats on you, man.
Yeah.
You got to vote.
I got to tell you, 50-25, that's like Commonwealth Cup dominance right there.
Yeah, pretty much. Hokies Ooh. Got the vote out, man.
Wow.
Tip of the hat to Hokie Nation. Trey Turner, three-time Woo. Winner, knocks off Mr. Wicks, three-time winner.
Wow. I am stunned.
Just a personal preference. I thought Wicks catching the Miami game was the best one I saw all year. But fans vote, man.
What was Miami doing giving up catches, by the way?
It's all right. Mario's in town now.
All good?
It's all good.
Is that right?
Apparently everybody's happy down there in Coral Gables.
Uh-huh. Before we get to the break here, a little bit of a re-rack on the on this coaching carousel. Chris Marv is the new defensive coordinator.
From Florida State.
At Virginia Tech. Linebackers coach at Florida State, now at Virginia Tech. Wes Goodwin, who's a senior defensive assistant analyst at Clemson.
I personally don't know him.
Chris Lowe rumoring his name as the potential new defensive coordinator to replace Brent Venables.
I know folks like him, but I don't know him personally.
Yeah.
Can't give you any intel on that.
So, defensive assistant, again, Dabo has promoted from in-house, everybody knows this, for years and has been very successful doing it. Venables, I think, Venables is the last guy he went out and got and brought in a coordinator role, right?
Well, he got Chad Morse from the offensive standpoint.
That's it.
That was a little different. Yeah. That was after Venables.
Right.
But for the most part, Dabo has been really comfortable by saying, hey, listen, I want people to understand our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for folks that go, well, that makes no sense. Well, you know what? You can go look up his record. And he'd sit there and say, it's all about scoreboard.
Yeah.
Kind of hard to argue.
Let's go to the tote board, if you will, here. Now, we're showing you a combination of head coaches and coordinators at areas where the coordinator is, that spot is vacant. Mark Whipple, by the way, resigning yesterday, mutual parting of the ways, according to just about everybody in Pittsburgh. Will not coach in the Peach Bowl against Michigan State. Sterling, Dino Babers, I think these are now, in this particular case, speculation only, I think these are all post-signing day hires. Because if you were going to bring somebody, you would have brought them now for the last piece of the recruiting, wouldn't you?
Well, timing's everything, but I told you, normally, traditionally, right after National Signing Day, we have a flurry of changes on staff right after that first signing period. So I suspect by the tail end of next week, you're going to have all kinds of stories left and right, not only just the ACC, but around the country.
Right. Very quickly on Virginia, an array of names. Anthony Poindexter, who was in Las Vegas last night to be inducted in the National Football Foundation College Hall of Fame ceremonies, is apparently a candidate at Virginia. Tony Elliott was listed as a candidate. We told you yesterday, Larry Williams of Tiger Illustrated saying Tony Elliott no longer a candidate at Virginia. Duke, Steve Weissman of the Raleigh News Observer reporting this morning that Jason Garrett, the former head coach of the Dallas Cowboys, reportedly is a candidate for Nina King, the athletic director, in that vacancy.
That would be interesting.
Yes, it would.
I mean, you do need to be able to recruit. This is not the National Football League.
Well, and if you're wondering, Jason Garrett is familiar with Duke. He and Tony Romo attended half dozen Duke basketball games at one point.
That's great, but you still got to be able to recruit it. I mean, I've been to Cameron Indoor. It doesn't make me a football coach.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Getting some late breaking news over there?
No, not really.
No, just more people just agreeing with your statement?
Just corresponding with the locals. Corresponding with locals.
Have we ruined somebody's morning by talking about your travels to Atlanta to the Limelight and Confetti's back in the day?
No, we're trying to protect the innocent. Do you?
Is that right?
Yes, trying to make sure that's...
Somebody saying, why you got to bring up that now? Maybe one of the boys we played golf with at Clemson back in the day?
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, okay.
Back when life was a little simpler.
Didn't have cell phones?
Didn't have... Thank God for that. Thank God you couldn't carry the old photo around with you.
Mm-hmm. That's
good
right.
Good God. Would that have been a disaster?
What? You wouldn't want to have had a cell phone back in the 80s?
Nope. Huh?
Going up and down 85?
Nope.
About the time you passed Toccoa Livonia there?
Nope. No, we did not need that.
No,
that
not
invention
at all.
Needed to be way after we got done with confetti.
And it was.
And
that's good.
Limelight going on those road trips to the ATL.
Mm-hmm. That's it. All right. Congratulations to several folks with ACC ties last night. The annual induction of the National Football Foundation and College Football Hall of Fame last night. Enshrined of note, former players Harris Barton, one of the all-time great offensive linemen at North Carolina history, becomes the sixth former Tar Heel to be inducted. Dan Morgan, who was honored on campus during the Miami-Virginia Tech game, great linebacker now in the front office of the Carolina Panthers. He first became the first player to sweep the three major defensive awards in one season, the Bednarik, the Butkus, and the Nagurski. He's Miami's all-time leading tackler. C.J. Spiller also went in the Hall of Fame last night, the fourth former Clemson Tiger to be inducted. First-team All-America kick returner, second-team as a running back, 2009 ACC Player of the Year. Also of note, Anthony Poindexter, one of the great safeties, defensive backs of the 90s in ACC football, combined on the hit of Warrick Dunn at the goal line in 95 on a Thursday night to hand Florida State their first loss.
And who knows? Could be the head football coach at Virginia for all we know.
Could be Virginia's next football coach. Dick Sheridan, who was a marvelous coach at NC State, also at Furman in the Southern Conference, honored as well last night in the class of 2020. Our congratulations to all of them on the highest honor that can be bestowed on a college football player. It's all that
great.
Simple.
Yeah, they're all great.
Yep.
And I guarantee old Danny Ford down there on that hemp farm down there in Pendleton, South Carolina, heard Dick Sheridan had that cold, clammy feel. Man, Dick Sheridan had his number about 3 years in a row there in the mid-'80s.
Yeah.
He was a great coach. Dick Sheridan people, tired of Dick Sheridan people. Sheridan, well, he was such a good – I always thought he – you know,
right.
To me, he kind of got out of coaching early, right? I thought he was going to be one of the all-time superstars.
Right.
He was a great, great football coach, though. Really tremendous.
Yep. No doubt about it. Philip Rivers turns 40 years old today.
God, he was in the NFL for 33 years. How's that possible? Seriously. It seemed like he was in the NFL for three decades. He's only 40?
Oh, Jericho Cotchery, line one.
Hey, that's what we went to Tallahassee and won.
And you know what? For everybody that ever watched Philip Rivers play in person.
You wonder how it left his hand.
Yeah, the ball is like he was throwing a medicine ball.
Hey.
But man, could he throw it.
I was a pretty good coach when Philip was there.
I'll tell you what. Old Philip Rivers could play, boys. He was
tell
tough.
It all.
He could play.
Yes, sir.
Last time NC State, maybe in fact the only time NC State went double digits winning season, right? Philip Rivers
got a chance,
and NC State this year has a shot.
Yep,
to reach that number of 10 plus.
Going to San Diego against the University of California, Los Angeles.
Did you see what Chip Kelly said the other day in the press conference?
Did not.
He was asked about NC State,
and
he said the only thing I know about them is that Dave Dorn is their coach, and Wolfpack's their nickname. What he said.
Oh boy.
Swear to God. Chip, he's a piece of work now. Chip used to be on my radio show on Sirius XM every week when he was coaching.
He's
Oregon.
An interesting dude.
He's a fascinating. Once you get a chance to know him,
right.
He is a really fascinating dude.
Yeah.
Big time. But he'll give you the Heisman pose now.
Oh,
he'll
man.
Block you out and just say, I don't have time for you. Catch you later. But he is He's an interesting that to me is a fun game. We went up to our Subway Top 5 the other day with our favorite bowl games. And I think NC State, UCLA is a blast. I mean, you get a little Pac-12, ACC, which you normally don't see.
Yeah.
And they're going to beautiful San Diego. I keep telling you, all you NC State fans, if you got some disposable income, that is a great trip. The Gas Lamp District, La Jolla. You go to the Old Town District. San Diego is fabulous.
They're Coronado playing the game Beach. At Petco Park, by the way, because they're building new stadiums.
Home of the lousy Padres.
Yeah.
Finished 40-some-odd games behind the first-place Giants.
The ACC's got this new tie with the Holiday Bowl. And as I understand it, I guess not all the NC State fans are crazy about San Diego. Let me just share this
with you. Would you rather be Topeka?
Well, let me just share this with you. It's a great trip.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a great trip.
That's a great town.
And they treat the teams like kings. The fans have a great time.
Well, the weather's great. There's great restaurants.
Right.
The beaches are out of sight. I used to be in the bowl business. I could give you 35 places that I would not want to be. San Diego is a great, great road trip.
I'm going to ask you to hold on the list of places that you wouldn't want to be because I'm afraid you might.
Well, I don't care. I'm going to tell you how it is. I mean, if it upset somebody at ESPN, I lived it. So I mean, hey, don't tell me I don't know what I'm talking about.
Perfect opportunity for us to go to the basketball schedule tonight, kids.
Oh, man. Don't get nervous. Don't get nervous, Wes.
Couple of games on the slate.
What are you going to do, throw me out of my own house?
Nope. Yeah, throw you out of your own basement. That'd be a trick. Miami hosts Lipscomb tonight, 7 o'clock, and then Cornell at Virginia Tech, 9 p.m. That's a doubleheader for you on ACC Network. You see along the platforms the women's card, number 22, Notre Dame at Valpo, Cornell at Syracuse, and Boston College at UMass tonight, all available on the ACC NX or ESPN+. Thanks to Tom Luganbill, Danny Busboom Kelly, Mark Krikorian. Congratulations to the Seminoles on the Women's Soccer National Championship. Full show tomorrow for you. Steve Forbes of Wake Forest will be here.
Former co-host.
That's right. Who's gone on clearly to bigger and better things.
And, you know, like a lot of folks, they come on this show, they move on and go somewhere else.
There you go.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.